Hey, brother! Guys, one of my favorite things about reading Harry Potter for the first time was just discovering the wizarding world for itself. Like, there's just so many cool places like Hogwarts, Diagon Alley, and the Ministry, and Hogsmeade.
I love magic.
Not to mention all the cool beasts like the hippogriffs or the acromantulas, the basilisk, or all the cool trinkets you discover like the Philosopher's Stone or the Hand of Glory or the Mirror of Erised. The list is honestly nearly endless, but one of the exciting things I've learned in all of our years doing Harry Potter YouTube stuff is finding out how many things are specific inventions of the wizarding world and how many things are not. Obviously, things like dragons or centaurs or mermaids are fantasy creatures you see all over the place, but what about mandrakes or Nicholas Flamel? Dobby? Those are all surprisingly not creations of the wizarding world, but instead folklore-inspired elements of Harry Potter. Which, like, obviously there's nothing wrong with that. That's just how fantasy writing is. I was just personally surprised by how many things I didn't even know were inspired in this way, or just like the cool history behind these various creatures or objects. So today we're revealing Harry Potter or Harry Nodder. All right, who wrote that? Let's start with a classic, the Philosopher's Stone, literally the title of the first book. In the wizarding world, it was created by Nicholas Flamel, with the power to turn any metal into gold and grant the elixir of life. This one is actually less based on folklore and more based on the once real life goal of alchemy and the quest of all alchemists, which was to in fact create the Philosopher's Stone with the exact same properties as described in Harry Potter. This is all back before the advent of modern science, where alchemists were genuinely trying to make the stone, and there are even instructions for how to do it recorded on these like massive 6-meter documents known as the Ripley Scroll. Ben and I have actually been fortunate enough to see one in person. Nicholas Flamel was also a very real person, but not actually even an alchemist. In real life, he was a landlord. He was involved with the book trade. And fun fact, his wife's real name was Perronel. So, alas, earwax, it turns out he did not succeed in actually creating the Philosopher's Stone. But ironically, posthumously, legends began sprouting up that he'd had a prophetic dream that had led him to the creation of the stone, which is obviously not true, but was still the inspiration for Harry Potter. Also, as I was researching, I came across this painting, which I think also must have been an influence for Harry Potter. It's known as Splendor Solis, or Splendor of the Sun, and it shows an alchemist carrying a jar full of gold liquid, presumably the elixir of life, with a black ribbon reading, "Let us ask the four elements of nature." Which, FYI, the four houses at Hogwarts each represent an element of nature, like Gryffindor is fire, Slytherin is water, Hufflepuff is ground, and Ravenclaw is air. But then on top of that in this painting, we also have a stag and a doe looking on at the alchemist, along with owls on the side, like, wow. Moving on, let's talk about mandrakes.
Or mandragora.
Yes, thank you, Hermione. So in Harry Potter, these screamy little root babies can grow leaves that have restorative properties and successfully de-petrify everyone after the events of Chamber of Secrets. But it turns out these aren't even based on like fictional things, but real life mandrake plants whose claim to fame is that their roots do look like humans and the plant does contain hallucinogenic tropane alkaloids, whatever that means. It sounds like they make you see things, but I'm mostly getting that from the hallucinogenic part. I have no idea what tropane alkaloids are. My research didn't go that deep. Small mints in a tin, maybe? No, that's Altoids. Thanks in advance for telling me about the tropane alkaloids. The point is, with these fun little properties, mandrakes have been associated with magical rituals throughout history, including present-day contemporary pagan traditions. So in Harry Potter, they say that the scream of the mandrake is fatal, and it turns out that idea also comes from folklore. And there are even writings that suggest the way you had to harvest a mandrake was to tie one end of a rope around the root and then the other around a dog so that when the dog like pulled the rope, it would pull the root out of the ground and you would be far enough away to be safe. Guess I'm not exactly sure what that means for the dog though. Next up is the Bezoar, incidentally a great name for a dog. In the story, they are stones from the stomach of a goat and can cure most poisons. It's what Harry uses to save Ron in Half-Blood Prince. In real life, however, they are stones from the stomach of a goat.
Or really, it's not a stone. It's like a mass of undigested fiber, which can also be found in cows and elephants, which is good if you're hoping to cure something huge from poison attacks.
You just take it right out of their goat and put it right down their mouth and... Right. But yes, in real life, people actually sought them out for their medicinal properties, which I'm sure you can guess are actually pretty non-existent. However, they sometimes did succeed in repelling poison from your body because, well, after you would swallow it, it would just make you sick and throw up, and that would, you know, get rid of the poison, so. Woo! Science!
I feel like there's a better way to throw up. Eat this goat fiber!
Actually, a fun fact, Ben and I once got to hold a real-life Bezoar, and also, since they were believed to be so valuable, sometimes they would store these in these, like, super cool, ornate golden cases. I mean, really, there's just no better place to store your undigested fiber, am I right? Humans are silly. Moving on, this next one is a little obscure and definitely not the primary villain of an entire book. Or wait, no, yes, it is the Basilisk. I guess to be fair, Tom Riddle is the villain. Let's not blame this gigantic horned snake for the actions of its master, right? I mean, I bet under normal guidance, it's like a super scaly golden retriever, possibly named Bezoar. Here, Bezoar, here, snakey snake. Actually, similar to a golden retriever, you can almost simply buy one at your local pet store because the common basilisk is just a small lizard and a member of the iguana family. You think that's what Quirrell was trying to teach them about?
Yes.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Thought you ought to know.
Quirrell, show them the iguana, tell them it's a basilisk. Misinformation.
But outside of the wizarding world, this is still quite the legendary creature and follows the lore we've come to know. It is regarded as the king of serpents, and the eyes have always been noted as being deadly. And one thing that's interesting is that within the wizarding world, it's noted that it could be killed if it hears the crow of a rooster. This is why, under the influence of Riddle's diary, Ginny keeps killing all of Hagrid's roosters. But believe it or not, this is mirrored in the actual folklore. Although, not all folklore describes it as a giant snake that can be killed by a rooster. Sometimes, it actually is half rooster with the head and front legs of a rooster with a reptilian body and sometimes wings, although this is also known by a whole separate name, the cockatrice. Whether you're in the wizarding world or not, though, it seems as though how you make a basilisk is agreed upon, and it is always by hatching the egg of a snake or a toad beneath a chicken. How do people figure these things out?
More eggs should we be putting underneath chickens?
Yeah. Oh, whoops. Mistake! You know how if you sit on something with your butt, you genetically turn whatever's in the egg into half of what you are. So, cockatrice. All right, I'll tell you guys what. We spent a decent amount of time in the Harry Potter wiki, and it is just insane to see this stuff written in just, you know, regular Wikipedia. Either way, though, as long as we're in the B section of the internet's encyclopedia, let's move on to Boggart. You know, your standard lesson for year 3 defense against the dark arts, shapeshifts and manifests as your greatest fear, can only be destroyed with laughter. This creature in particular is so essential to Harry's conjuring of the Patronus, I felt positive it was a Wizarding World exclusive, but no. Although on that note, I feel like it is an essential part of every first date. Like you're sitting down, you're like, so what form would your Boggart take?
What's a Boggart?
Check, please.
I mean, if they have to ask, am I right?
Also, though, Patronuses are a unique thing to Harry Potter, as are Dementors, which were inspired by, wait for it, severe depression.
Yikes.
Which is why now is a great time to thank today's sponsor, BetterHelp. Let's talk for a second about relationships. Maybe take your best friend, for example. It's so easy to spend time with them, talk about anything, and you never leave any exchange feeling worn out. This special kinship may be the rare case of what I'll call best friend magic, a soul friend even. But barring the occasional best friend magic, this might make you feel like how you get on with someone should be easy in order to be right. The truth is, though, most relationships are at their best when both people put in the work to make them great. Ben and I spend every day trying to navigate being brothers and business partners, and it takes a lot of communication and the occasional need to set aside a work problem to just be brothers. That's when, with no notice to the staff, Ben and I would just go outside and argue about who gets to sit in the front seat.
I always win.
But Ben works really hard to understand that I always win. No, really, the way we're able to work together so well as brothers and business partners is because we're both regulars in therapy. Like, we're learning how to communicate, to set boundaries, and respect each other along the way. And if you think you could benefit, give BetterHelp a try. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Then you can become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/super today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/super. Link is in the description down below. And now back to Boggarts. So it turns out the Boggart is also a supernatural being from English folklore, though to be fair, this one does seem to deviate from the source material a little bit. Boggarts have been described as having a relatively human-like form, though occasionally they are described as being more scary and or beast-like in nature. Personally, I love this 2018 depiction based on part of the description from T. Sternberg's Dialect and Folklore of Northamptonshire. Northamptonshire. Anyway, it's the Jack in the Box for me. Point is, there are descriptions of them which obviously deviate rather greatly from the Wizarding Boggart, which has no known form. Well, I guess Moody can see it in that one time. It's like, what did he see? Did it transform? Does it know it's being stared at? Otherwise, though, it seems like they're considered to be more annoying, maybe, than terrifying. Like, Boggarts are said to follow a family wherever they flee and crawl into people's beds at night and put a clammy hand on their faces. And okay, what am I talking about? I lied. This version is actually way more scary. Even worse, though, is if for some reason you decide to give one of these things a name, at which point they cannot be reasoned with or persuaded, they become uncontrollable and just straight up destructive, which, as I'm saying it, it sounds like they turn into toddlers, do they? Do they turn into toddlers? Be honest, I might be living with a couple of Boggarts. I named them all.
There's three of them.
Hi, boys. I love you.
Listen to your mom.
What's crazy is how Boggarts almost remind me of house elves, but that can't be the inspiration for that because house elves are also on the list.
I'm an elf.
But, and this blew my mind, in folklore, they're not called house elves. They're called Dobbies or Brownies.
Dobby, sir.
Unlike house elves, though, brownies are less elf-like and more like a spirit that just helps you out around the house, doing chores and stuff, which seems nice, although in one tale, the brownie was said to organize anything that was disorganized, but then also disorganize anything that was organized, and that'd be so frustrating. Hi, boys. Similar to the Boggart from before, though, brownies also do not want to be given a name and will also leave if given one. One other big key difference between house elves and brownies is the clothing situation. So in Harry Potter, if you give a house elf clothes, it frees them, but in actual folklore, it will anger them and they will abandon you.
Harry Potter should have not given Dobby a sock. It's just that Dobby the house elf must maim or kill Harry Potter.
But a possibly more comforting thought is that brownies will also leave if they feel slighted or taken advantage of. So in folklore, they are much more in control of if they want to help you out and can choose to leave if they are being treated too well or too badly.
You can't have met many decent wizards then.
No, I haven't.
So really your best bet is just like leave them alone, spare some porridge for them, and you're made in the shade. They're just helping out around the house, yay. But don't classify that porridge as payment. They don't want payment. They will leave. They do want food though, so it's just more like a gift. It's more like a gift. Speaking of shade though, let's move on to the Whomping Willow. Like, what a segue, am I right? And also, what a better place to lie down for an afternoon nap. Actually, no, that's a terrible idea. The Whomping Willow is straight deadly. The Whomping Willow, though, does not mirror some, like, specific creature. English folklore at large just seems to regard the willow tree as sinister. Maybe less on the attack your flying car front and more on the, you know, uprooting itself and stalking you front. I can think of nothing worse than a tree running after me. The Whomping Willow is of course vital to the overall narrative though, as it was planted over top of the secret passage to the Shrieking Shack, specifically for R.J. Lupin so he can transform into a werewolf at peace. Speaking of werewolves, you're not gonna believe this one. Werewolves, not exclusively a Harry Potter thing.
I literally can't.
No, I think, wait, we already knew that one. My bad. We already covered Boggarts. What else does Lupin teach about? Yes, red caps, hinky punks, and Grindylows. Turns out all three of these spawn from folklore. Real life red caps are a kind of like goblin that is said to live in the ruins of castles and seem kind of vicious. Like they get their name from their habit of soaking their caps in the blood of their victims. So, yikes. Whereas in Harry Potter, they are also goblin-like, but just live in places where human blood has been shed, like in a dungeon or a pothole. You know how when you're walking down the street and you're like, whoa, watch out, you almost stepped in a pothole full of blood. No, just me? I gotta move. And then Hinky Punks show up all over the place in fiction, notably in the Pixar film Brave, where they go by their other common name, the Will of the Wisp. And these, surprisingly, are somewhat real, but also not. Like, basically in swamplands, what happens is enough methane gas is produced by the decaying organic matter, which ignites the other chemical compounds in the air to create small flares. The technical term, I believe, is swamp fart. The more you know. Hashtag swamp fart. Trending now, hopefully. I mean, if we get hashtag swamp fart trending, that's gonna be the peak of our entire career. And then there's Grindylows, the bane of Fleur Delacour's existence.
The Grindylows.
So in canon, Grindylows are little humanoid water demons with long, strong fingers. And this is actually a very like one-to-one inspiration, as that is also exactly how they're described in English folklore, just tiny water demons with long fingers. But speaking of Fleur, let's also talk about Vila. And honestly, I was shocked. These were not unique to Harry Potter, but alas, get it? Last girl, Vila. Nailed it. What we know about Vila in Harry Potter is that they are beautiful creatures that have an allure about them that is especially potent towards Ronald Weasley. Well, I mean, actually all men, but especially Ron.
You know, I like it when they walk.
Now, since they're Bulgaria's mascot of choice at the Quidditch World Cup, it should come as no surprise that Vila are part of Bulgarian mythos and are female spirits of nature with an ambivalent relationship with humans. Like, it seems like they can be sort of helpful or hurtful, just sort of depending on the situation. They can be warriors and occasionally will help the hero by granting them some kind of magical object. Or they can be pretty violent and very prone to revenge if you insult them or disregard their orders or, you know, interrupt their dancing circles. Which is why it should be no surprise then in Harry Potter that they get wildly angry at the leprechauns who show up and interrupt their dancing circle, where if you'll recall, they turn into like weird bird-like creatures and start hurling fireballs. Honestly, I don't feel like that gets brought up enough. Like, that happens. Now, actual Vila don't do the bird and fire thing, but it is, I think, a very fun adaptation for the Wizarding World. And honestly, guys, I think this list could probably go on for almost ever, but I think that covers all of the high points for things in the Wizarding World you might not have known existed, like, in the greater mythos of the real world. But if you want more videos like this, please let us know in the title section down below, because we could go on about this, like, for probably ever. And hey, if you're thirsty for more knowledge, head on over to carlinbrothersmercantile.com and pick up this super mug for, you know, quenching your thirst. It's super. It even says super right on it. So, you know it's true. Guys, thanks as always for watching today's video. Don't forget to like it if you haven't already and ring that bell so you don't miss any future Harry Potter action from us. If you want to see how Harry himself is actually a living, breathing Philosopher's Stone, check out this video right here. But otherwise, Ben, until next time, I will see you in another life, brother.